Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Among the many national and politically charged news themes of the year so far are ICE, where it belongs and how far agents can go, and vaccines. So we're going to get the latest on both today, starting with ICE. They're at airports, some would say to help out during a TSA agent shortage, and others would say to keep an eye out for deportation possibilities at America's hub airports. That's a story we've heard a lot about. But there's something else brewing. Here's more from KDKA Radio.
I'm Paul Rasmussen. Three city council members are introducing legislation today to prohibit Pittsburgh police from working with federal immigration agents. Barb Warwick says police would not be able to ask anyone in custody about their immigration status.
They also will not share information with ICE about anyone who they may have in custody.
Bill would also prohibit the use of city-owned property to stage or assist federal immigration enforcement. Reaction is coming in.
The city GOP issued a statement saying federal immigration enforcement is the responsibility of federal agencies, adding the bills would set a dangerous precedent about selectively cooperating with federal authorities. Some public commenters at Tuesday's session agreed.
I'm an old school Democrat. I'm a Kennedy Democrat, Clinton Democrat, Obama Democrat, and I'm tired of these San Francisco values being infiltrated in our city.
But the bill's supporters spoke out too.
I'm really proud of the city for starting to take steps towards protecting people's constitutional rights.
So your opinion of local police cooperating with ICE usually depends on your political perspective. And it's the same for this. As measles cases rise and vaccination rates drop in schools, Chad Hartman discusses whether exemptions should be allowed. And in America, vaccines have become a politically charged issue, as Health and Human Services Director RFK Jr., has loudly discussed his skepticism of some of them, and the repercussions over COVID vaccine mandates still linger.
Once again, Democrats are bringing up the idea of how parents can get out of the MMR vaccine mandate. Of course, it's the measles, the mumps, rubella. And Minnesota law right now requires you, okay, for the kids to get the vaccine. However, you have exceptions. If a physician signs a statement saying the vaccine should not be administered to a child for medical reasons, then the child can be enrolled without an MMR vaccination. But then you also have, and this is our state law right now, allows a parent or guardian to obtain a notarized statement that the child has been immunized, has not been immunized against MMR because of the conscientious held beliefs of the parents or guardian of the minor child. There are Democrats who are trying to remove this exemption. We have watched numbers continue to drop dramatically related to vaccines because of people's anger, because of people feeling like Fauci and others lied, that their businesses were ruined, that their kids lost out on school, that they believe some crackpot theory, or maybe they were right on something. Okay, maybe their belief on COVID early on proved out to be prophetic. And because of that, in particular, vaccines are dropping in so many different categories. As example, in a one of the Democrats cited this, that vaccines for kindergarten 14 years ago, 2012, 95%. It's now 87%. That's a lot of kids. This Democrat, her name is Liz Bolden, she said Minnesota is fourth lowest among 50 states for kindergartners' MMR vaccination. And we know across the country that measles cases are jumping because of Robert Kennedy. I'm on the religious side. If you're on the religious side, I'm sorry on this one. I'm not trying to stop you from having strong convictions and strong beliefs. But when your kid is now interacting with other children and you are potentially putting those kids at harm's way and you're attending a public school, no, I'm at 100% no, you do not get that exception. Quickly, where do you guys stand? Should a parent be able to say, we've made the decision? Conscientious held beliefs, often religion, not always, but our kid's not going to be vaccinated. Adam, yes or no?
Absolutely not. If you want to do that, then you send your kid to a private school where they don't require it. But public schools, no, you got to play the game.
Agree 100%. Dave?
Makes three of us. Yes. Yep. Public school, sorry. Follow the rules.
How about the tougher one? Medical reasons. I mean, example, my youngest son, Quentin, has a lower immunity. And so when we send him to a public school, if kids are in school for, you know, that's where they live, but parents have a doctor who says this could harm this child, which I believe, okay, there are kids out there. Should there be exceptions, or is this also one of those, and Adam, I'll let you go first on this again, is this also one, I'm sorry, we have genuine empathy for your child, we hope nothing happens to her or him, but this is a public school, and we want to be accommodating to everybody, but your child not vaccinated, and we're accepting the medical reasons, puts other kid at harm's way. What are you saying?
I still feel the same way, although with medical reasons, I mean, I am willing to defer to a doctor in a particular case who says either, okay, there's still certain circumstances where it would be safe for this child to attend this school. But I feel the same way, and I feel terrible for parents who have that situation. But it's not just that child's health we're concerned about. There are many other children's health, the health of other kids we're concerned about.
That's it for me. I think you're putting a larger group in jeopardy of health. And I have a tough time even saying this because kids who have physical and intellectual delays are so easily forgotten in our society, okay? And young adults and adults. And a lot of these kids who are medically compromised from the MMR vaccine have faced so many issues, and now you're taking away something that is elementary. But if sadly their lack of a vaccine puts a larger group in jeopardy, I want them to be aided and helped with another school. I still think we need to think of the larger group of kids who are vulnerable. What do you want to say, Dave?
I'm not as bullish as you two on I'm saying if no medical exemptions. I think you probably have to evaluate each case separately, case by case basis. But I would believe that if we're just talking medical exceptions and that being the only way to get out of it, my medical degree would tell me that herd immunity, quote unquote herd immunity, can still be achieved if those are the only kids that have a legit medical reason they can't get MMR vaccine. If those are the only ones that don't have it, I think probably be okay.
What? But then I could come back and say, what if it's just a small group who fall in the category of conscientiously objecting? And that turns out that's such a small group. Couldn't we make the argument that herd immunity most likely work in that example also?
You can make that argument, and then I'm going to ask, how many other small groups do you want to make?
That's why I think it's easier to be consistent. But I get it. It just... It sounds cruel.
Yeah.
Right? And you're saying to a child who's done absolutely nothing wrong, who wants to hang out with his or her friends, but if it does add an element of health concerns, it's not an easy one.
Now, we stay non-political on this show, but if you're moving around this weekend, you're going to see protests, and it's in your best interest to know what's going on. So here it is. Organizers across the U.S. are planning more than 3,000 local events for what they're calling the No Kings Day of Nonviolent Action. More than 5 million people participated in thousands of events last June for the inaugural No Kings events. Participation swelled to 7 million for October's protest. And organizers are promoting Saturday's No Kings Day actions as one of the largest single-day protests in U.S. history. Here's more from one of the organizers on WWJ News Radio.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Audrey Boyaud. I am the founder of We the People Dissent, a local indivisible chapter. Far too many of our elected officials are not responding the way they must to the Trump administration. No kings, no war, and no ICE. Our message is crystal clear. We are united in our opposition to the war in Iran, which we are united in our opposition of any threats to our right to vote, and we are united in our opposition to ICE. This agency must be defunded immediately.
Here's a pro and con analysis of the protests from Jason Derusha.
It's an effort that I would like to start on our show today called Thank a TSA Agent. The Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport is essentially business as usual, and it's because our TSA agents, for the second time this year, have shown up at sort of crazy high levels, not calling out sick because they have to take a second job because they're not getting their paycheck. They're just showing up to work. And without them, all the families trying to get out of town on spring break, all of the business people trying to fly, all of the people trying to fly somewhere for a family emergency, it certainly could have been chaos like we see all over the country. So I just want you, if you've flown through our airport during this government shutdown, during this partial government shutdown, to thank a TSA agent.
D-Rush Hour News headlines. Going in depth with our friend Blois Olson, drive time take on the No Kings protest going on in St. Paul this weekend. Blois, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
So the lineup for this thing is, I mean, it feels more like a big time concert or a show.
Yeah.
Is this good for Democrats who are trying to run in Minnesota in a trying to maybe be a little more moderate following the Jacob Frey roadmap, the Kali Her roadmap, or does this sort of paint them more to the left?
Well, I mean, I think it is definitely the left wing of the DFL that is there, right? Bernie Sanders, Joan Baez, the Peggy Flanagan, Angie Craig, not on the ticket, right? And so it is the left side of the DFL party. Now, that, interestingly enough, is the part of the party that was not energized until ICE came to town. And so that helps them. You know, we analyzed the turnout of different parts of the state in presidential and midterm elections. And in midterm elections since 2018, Democrats have really held their energy in Hennepin and Ramsey County and to some degree the suburbs, like the western suburbs where, you know, it used to be represented by a Republican. Now Kelly Morrison barely has an opponent in the third congressional district. So Democrats have needed this energy boost because remember in October when Governor Walz announced he was going to run again, 50% of Democrats said he should not run again. So they've needed this energy. So I think they know that they're going to have other issues and other messages, but these are the kind of events that they can sign up volunteers. They can build the machine and the grassroots going into the election. Furthermore, Republicans don't have anything like it. And maybe if President Trump did a rally at the Capitol, you'd get as many people, but I think you'd get a much larger side of protest too. So I think it's in the near term, it's only March. Democrats are going to lean into this energy as much as they can.
When you look at it, Bruce Springsteen added to the bill where he's going to sing at this rally before his tour date on Tuesday at Target Center. I think your point is very interesting that the energy, the rallies, sort of the stuff that the Trump train has sort of attracted when he's run, all of that energy is on the Democratic side right now. Does that energy, does that sort of visible stuff, does it translate into votes?
Well, I think it's one signal. Okay. And, you know, I'm all about the signals and the noise. It's one signal. It's not the be-all, end-all of the campaign. One of the other signals we've seen is that in more rural areas like Pine County, Democrats had more turnout at their caucuses and their conventions. Now, conversely, there's a few Republican conventions that had more turnout this year too. And so it depends on where you are, who the organizers are that are out there. I think the other thing that you've heard Jacob Fry and Governor Walz talk about is this thing that came out of Metro Surge, is that Minnesota is this beacon of democracy and hope and pushback against the authoritarian federal government. Well, I mean, you hear it, you got to feel it, you got to see it. We'll see just how big this rally is, but it's going to probably be 50, maybe 100,000 people. It's going to be huge.
It's big, but, yeah.
But here's the counter. But this is what Minnesotans need to know, but maybe not, you know, be too Minnesotan about, is that as I was traveling last week, I was at a restaurant, and there was a moment where we told the owner that we were from Minnesota. She almost bought our meal. She literally was like, "You're from Minnesota? This isn't a southern state." She's like, "I should buy your meal." We're like, no, you don't have to. No, you guys are heroes up there. And so I think an event like this will only feed the idea that Minnesota is the epicenter of the pushback against Donald Trump.
That's interesting. It is very interesting. And you wonder, like, are these people who are already just voting this way anyway, they would have been a reliable Democratic voter, so it doesn't matter. My sense is there are some people who maybe sat out the last election that are pretty fired up. And there's a math problem that Republicans have in the state of Minnesota, and that is more people live in the urban areas by a lot.
Yes. No, that's what we track. I mean, so 300,000 votes advantage for Democrats just out of Hennepin County. They come out of Hennepin County with a 300,000 vote lead. Then they come out of Ramsey County with another 100,000 vote lead. And so Republicans need the whole state to make up the lead of just those two counties, suburbs, exurbs, the Iron Range, other parts of greater Minnesota. And that's where, since 2018, Republicans have been challenged. And remember, in 2016, Donald Trump came closer than any Republican to win the presidency out of Minnesota. And Republicans have not won the governorship since 2006, so 20 years. The math is really hard for Republicans, especially if Democrats have energy and there's an unpopular president.
It's very interesting. I wonder a little bit, as we talk with Blois Olson, who you can read his commentary and the latest political news in the Morning Take newsletter. When you look at the energy on the Democratic side and the fact that the cities and even the suburbs, you wrote today in your newsletter about how in my home area of Maple Grove, State Senator Warren Limmer decided he wasn't going to run. He was going to retire. And no one on the Republican side has really stepped up to run, which is just remarkable in a time where I think Republicans felt like they had some good mojo running their way.
Yeah, we've watched this. We have a Fluence election tracker that's tracking every race. Democrats recruited candidates early. They recruited better candidates. You look at Limmer retiring. The Republicans don't have a candidate there. There's a hope that Kristen Robbins will drop out of the governor's race and run for that Senate seat, since she is from half of that district. But there's another suburban seat down Shakopee area where there's a Republican there now who's running for the Senate, and they can't find a House member. Hmm. So Democrats have just, they've been more organized going into this. And they were really organized in Senate races where they wanted to make sure that Republicans battle. Because the game, Jason, that they play, that we watch, is if they have competitive races in a Democratic seat, then that's less resources Democrats can put into a Republican seat. And Democrats just have kind of loaded the board with more competition for Republicans. But it's only March. There's a lot of time. I was speaking to a group this morning. I said, remember last August when gun control was the top issue that people were talking about? We have since had fraud as the top issue. And now we have ICE as a top issue and immigration as a top issue and fraud back to a top issue. So like the rotating issue bar We don't know what the top issue in July or August could be. If it's the economy and it's bad, that's bad for Republicans. If it's the economy and it's good, Democrats will be like, wait, what about ICE?
Right. Yeah, and that's a long time from now. Very interesting.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.